Bhagavatam and rendering services unto the pure devotees. All that is troublesome within the heart becomes practically destroyed almost to nil, and transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord, who is praised with transcendental hymns, comes into being established as an irrevocable fact. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 25, text number 18. Jnana vairagya yuktena bhakti yuktena chatmana hari pashat yudashinam prakritim cha tochasam. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. In that position of self-realization by practice of knowledge and renunciation in devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective. He becomes indifferent to material existence, and the material influence acts less powerfully upon him. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. As the contamination of the germs of a particular disease can influence a weaker person, similarly, the influence of material nature or illusionary energy can act on the weaker or conditioned soul, but not on the liberated soul. Self-realization is the position of the liberated state. One understands his constitutional position by knowledge and vairagya, renunciation. Without knowledge, one cannot have realization. The realization that one is the infinitesimal part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit makes him unattached to material conditioned life. That is the beginning of devotional service. Unless one is liberated from material contamination, one cannot engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord. In this verse, therefore, it is stated, jnana vairagya yuktena, when one is in full knowledge of one's constitutional position and is in the renounced order of life, detached from material attraction. Then by pure devotional service, bhakti yuktena, he can engage himself as a loving servant of the Lord. Paripashyati means that he can see everything in its right perspective. Then the influence of material nature becomes almost nil. That is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. When one is self-realized, he becomes happy and is free from the influence of material nature. And at the same time, he is free from lamentation and hankering. The Lord states that position as mad bhaktim labhate param, the real state of the beginning of devotional service. Similarly, it is confirmed in the Narada Pancharatra that when the senses are purified, they can then be engaged in devotional service of the Lord. One who is attached to material contamination, I repeat that, one who is attached to material contamination cannot be a devotee. Jnana vairagya yuktena bhakti yuktena chatmana paripashyat yudashinam prakritim cha tochasam. In that position of self-realization by practice of knowledge and renunciation in devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective. He becomes indifferent to material existence, and the material influence acts less powerfully upon him. Om agyanate marandasya Jnanangana salakaya chaksurum militam yena tasmai shri gurave namam. Sri Chaitanya manomvistam shapitam yenam bhutale svayam rupa gitabmayam datati spam patantikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadaita Girara Shivasri Gaura Bhaktavindam. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Kapila Muni is explaining the science of devotional service, which is a very great science. It is not a sentimental philosophy. It is a science. Science means, in the spiritual science, the study of spirit. Of course, in the material world, everyone is studying matter, but here we have a study of the actual science of devotional service. So this chapter is called The Glories of Devotional Service, those glories. So here, the quality of devotional service, one of the instant qualities of devotional service is that Bhakti Devi, she has two children. Those children, two sons, one is called Jnana and one is called Vairagya. So these are all the family of spiritual life, Jnana, Vairagya. Notice it doesn't say Vairagya Jnana. It always says Jnana Vairagya. So the first principle of spiritual life is that one must have Jnana. Therefore Krishna says to those who are constantly worshiping me with all their hearts, I give them the understanding, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam. I give them the understanding from within the heart. So this is called Hridaya. Hridaya, this is called, just like we are singing every morning, that the spiritual master is giving us this this knowledge from within the heart. So this knowledge is there within the heart. What is this knowledge? This knowledge is self-realization. The qualities of the soul, we always use that phrase, sat-chit ananda. So sat-chit, chit means knowledge. So automatically, when one becomes self-realized, then there must automatically be knowledge. Otherwise, one's not becoming self-realized. Because the self is full of knowledge. So if knowledge is not coming, then the self is not being realized. So this first quality must be there, this jnana, jnana vairagya. So this quality of knowledge is there within the heart, and from chit, then there's also sat-chit. And then what is the third thing? Ananda. So this ananda, as soon as there is ananda, then there is vairagya. You cannot have vairagya without ananda. It's not possible. Then it is artificial. That's why in the other processes of yoga, this idea of vairagya, jnana vairagya, are not complete. The complete science is bhakti jnana vairagya. So the bhakti is the most essential factor. And that bhakti, devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a great science. Many times Prabhupada uses the example that the hand, the satisfaction of the hand, he also uses the example of the leaves of the tree. The leaves of the tree or the hand, they are part of a complete system. The body is a biological system. Even science admits that, isn't it? They say a biological system. Just like we say solar system, biological system, ecological system, oceanic system. There are so many systems. Something which goes on by order. Something which is ordered. Systematic. Systematic arrangement. Just like when we have a car, it's a mechanical arrangement, and it's made up of different systems, the water cooling system, the heating system, the combustion system. There are so many different units within the complete unit. So this is described as Om Purnamada Purnamidam, that the personality of God, it is perfect and complete. These qualities are very important to study, that God is complete. We are incomplete. We are feeling incomplete. That's a fact. We are feeling incomplete. Not only are we feeling incomplete, but we are actually incomplete in so many different ways. If you were to describe our condition, one thing you could say is that it's definitely incomplete, isn't it? Study all the things about your body. Every single thing about you is incomplete. You have incomplete hearing, incomplete seeing, incomplete taste, incomplete touch. You have incomplete knowledge. You have incomplete intelligence. Sometimes you're completely stupid, isn't it? Or completely thick, like a log. So that completeness may be there. We can say that guy is a complete idiot, isn't it? Sometimes we use that. So at least we've got some completeness, but unfortunately the wrong direction, isn't it? It's the wrong direction. If we say this, that guy's a complete fool. But in the other direction, we can say incompleteness. And most of all, we are very acquainted with the fact that we are incomplete. We are incomplete as individual persons. As people, we are incomplete because we are not completely satisfied. We are not completely satisfied. Now, generally, in the material world, that incomplete satisfaction is also understood by the materialist. I mean, anyone will admit that I'm not completely happy. But the difference is that they think that they can make an arrangement to actually rectify that problem. They think that they can make the arrangement. This is the difference between an atheist and a theist, is that the atheistic person automatically feels by his egotistic assumptions, egocentric intelligence, he feels that if we make some adjustment to this incomplete situation, if we make some adjustment to this incomplete arrangement, we can actually make it complete. It just needs a little bit more addition. For instance, I'm unhappy because I haven't got a nice big house, or I haven't got a nice wife, or I haven't got a nice family, I haven't got a good bank account, I haven't even got a good bank manager. I haven't got a good this and I haven't got a good that. So if I make these things good, then I'll be happy. This is the idea circulating within the mind. Because it's natural that the living entity separated from God instinctively thinks himself to be God. He has no other way of ascertaining his situation. Just like when you're in darkness, when you are in complete darkness, then whatever light you can gain, then from that small amount of light, you try to make things out, isn't it? Just like if you're in a very dark room, if you had this experience, and there's a little light coming out of the keyhole. So that little bit of light coming through the keyhole, that's what you work on, isn't it? That's what you start working on. You can't work on darkness. You have to work on light. So in the material world, we are all born into darkness. So that darkness, ignorance, is no good. So we have to get some light. Light means knowledge. We vitally need some knowledge. But unfortunately, we are limited by our knowledge. And therefore, because we are limited by our knowledge, we are not capable of vairagya. We are not capable of renunciation. Because the knowledge of the material world, unfortunately, is relative to our condition. That is why it's called conditional knowledge. Conditional knowledge means that knowledge which is reliant upon certain conditions. So in the material world, the idea is to make it an adjustment in the conditions, and then hopefully the knowledge will increase. With the increase of knowledge, we will gain mastership over this world. We will gain control. That's the idea. When we gain control, then we can be the architects of our own destiny. Then we can create all sorts of wonderful arrangements by which we'll become happy. That's why if you look at the materialist, what do they gauge their situation on? They gauge it on what is called the different perimeters, or they have what they call gross national production. Isn't it? The country is gauged by how much it produces. So how much wealth is produced, how much materialistic items in the form of what they call consumer goods, by producing food, by producing oil, by producing so many different things, a country becomes known as being prosperous. Just like America is considered a prosperous country. So you would automatically think that everyone in America should be happy. But it's the most miserable country on the planet. Now, economists can't understand this. I was reading an article where, and hearing also, that they're coming to the conclusion now, because see, what they're reaching is a certain saturation in materialism. When they reach a certain saturation, they look around and see that everyone's just as miserable as they were 100 years ago. There's no difference. They've actually got some records going back, what they call these polls, where they interview people, find things out. So they got records going back, and actually people are no more happier today than they were 70 years ago, 80 years ago, 100 years ago. They're no more happier. You can say that their situation has vastly increased. They've got computers and internet and television and cinemas, and they've got better facilities for driving around. So they got all of these things. But unfortunately, what they call the self-satisfaction is at a very low level. Because basically, they're gauging, or their center of observation is based upon the body. And therefore, the social situation is an extended form of selfishness of what they consider to be actual happiness. And because they don't have any happiness, then they can't have any detachment. You see, detachment comes from happiness. You see, if you see people, generally, if you study, for instance, in a condition in the material world, you'll find that when people are happy, I mean, Prabhupada uses the example that when you've gone to a restaurant and you've eaten a big meal, I mean, I don't know if anyone's had the example of that, if you're really full up, you don't mind giving food away. You're quite happy to give it away because you're feeling satisfied. Therefore, the renunciation is very automatic because in you, you're feeling satisfied. So similarly, people who are generally financially satisfied, they donate. People who are satisfied in their materialistic, they're more generous. But people who are not satisfied, then they're more attached. Now, if you study this further, you'll find that this pleasure, just like, for instance, you'll find that in the material world, the search for pleasure generally goes on in many, many levels, and the real conclusion of so-called material pleasure is found when one is engaged in a relationship. Just like you find that in the youth, a young boy or young girl, they generally are engaged in so many different pursuits of happiness, in various types of frivolity and going to holidays and clubs and restaurants and discotheques and rock shows. And they engage themselves in so many different types of frivolous activity. But as soon as they find a relationship, generally when they find a relationship, that relationship between a man and a woman, then they settle down, they have a marriage, they have children, then automatically, from a crude example, they become more settled in their behavior. And actually, they even are willing to just sit down with each other. You'll find that when people are middle-aged or older, they just sit at home. Just, let's have a night in, darling, and sit together watching telly. They do all these kind of boring activities. If they'd have done them when they were young, they would be considered completely boring. But now that they've settled into relationship, then they're even sometimes content to be with just each other, just me and you, darling. So when they go on their caravan holidays, they stay together in their little caravan, and they come out and they sit together, have breakfast together with the children, and go down to the beach, and it's all very civil. They don't go raving down to discotheques and fast cars and nightclubs. All those things are, they're not very much attractive because they've now got a relationship, you see? So if you study any kind of human psychology, you'll find that relationship is the real essence of happiness. It is the real thing of happiness, because relationship is the reciprocation of love. Now, that aspect of love, generally people consider love in the materialistic sense, that which is related to the body.